there are two ways I think we can split that conversation. One is that it can be a function or a container.
This is episode number 63 of DevOps Paradox, Serverless 101. Welcome to DevOps Paradox. This is a podcast about random stuff in which we, Darren and Victor, pretend we know what we're talking about. Most of the time, we mask our ignorance by putting the word DevOps everywhere we can and mix it with random buzzwords like Kubernetes, serverless, CI/CD, team productivity, islands of happiness, and other fancy expressions that make us sound like we know what we're doing. Occasionally, we invite guests who do know something, but we do not do that often since they might make us look incompetent. The truth is out there, and there is no way we are going to find it. P.S. It's Darren reading this text and feeling embarrassed that Victor made me do it. Here are your hosts, Darren Pope and Victor Farsic. Now, if you were with us last week, and you should have been, if you haven't, go listen to last week's episode. Our conversation with Adam sort of devolved into what's next after Kubernetes. And we said serverless. Now, we've got the new DevOps catalog course and book. If you haven't picked it up, go pick it up. The link for it is down in the show notes. Shameless plug. We realize that we've talked a little bit about serverless before, but since we're taking sort of this detour in the trainings, that we should focus a little bit more on how we see serverless. So we've got a handful of episodes coming up over the next few weeks. Not sure exactly how many, but we're going to start today with maybe it's a serverless 101 or how we see serverless. And if you go back in the history books 5 years ago, a little bit more than that, you could have seen the progress over time. There used to be Parse, which was a cool standalone service that was a backend as a service, right? It's the as a service has been changing over time, right? We had platform as a service, then it got backend as a service. But now we have function as a service. It's sort of like we are decomposing everything down to functions. Is that how we think serverless is today? So here we are in mid-2020. What is serverless today?
So I think it's important to decouple the idea from specific implementation, whatever the subject is, right? And in my head, the idea about serverless is that we focus more on writing code than letting somebody else do the rest. Kind of, when I say writing code, testing and stuff like that, right, as well. So I see serverless as evolution of providing more stuff on top of infrastructure as a service, right? So it's, we're not giving you any more just pure servers like VMs, like what is really what cloud started with. We're giving you more and more and more so that you can focus more and more on your core business. And serverless in that context is giving more services so that your applications run well. Like, we're going to give you not only server where your stuff runs, but we're going to give you monitoring and auto-scaling and so on and so forth until you get to the point where all you have to do is say, this is my application, run it. And I'm going to continue being focused on my application. That's how I see serverless, right? This is not necessarily a definition of services, but serverless, but how I see it. Now, the problem is that, and this is normal, when we get some terms, like in this case, serverless, we inevitably associate it with certain implementations of that term, right? So when we talk serverless, most of the people first think Lambda, right? Same thing like when you say Google, you don't say search, right? Even though Google is not the only search engine, because it became so big for decently good reason. So people associate Lambda with serverless which is a right association, to be honest, and therefore associated serverless R functions. Where in my case, I think that that functions is a subset, is a flavor of serverless. And anything that can allow me to just say, this is my application, do whatever needs to be done with it, in my head is serverless in a way.
I sort of agree, because you're saying my application, but I can't take a whole application and run it as a single Lambda. I could, but should I? And that's we're going to talk about all those deep details on the next episode, but go ahead, let's talk about it just for a second.
Yeah, but can you repeat that sentence, but say serverless instead of Lambda in that same sentence?
I don't even remember what I said.
So you said, I cannot run my whole application as Lambda. And if I would change that and say, I cannot run my whole application as serverless, then I would disagree. Your application cannot be a function. Your full application cannot be a function. Therefore, it cannot be Lambda. That is correct. But there is nothing really saying that your whole application, no matter whether it is 10 lines of code or 1,000 or 100,000, cannot be treated as serverless. Serverless is in terms, here's the application. Do what needs to be done. That's why I would and the two major groups that I'm seeing, there are many, right? But there are two ways I think we can split that conversation. One is that it can be a function or a container, right? There are other flavors, but those are the most common, function, container. And you can see that all the providers are providing those two flavors of serverless. Like Google has Google Functions and Google Cloud Run. And then Azure has Azure Functions and Azure Container something, I don't remember. And AWS has Lambda and ECS with Fargate, right? So everybody has those two flavors, which have different pros and cons. And then we can split it maybe into managed and self-managed, right? Will you let somebody else outside of your company manage everything after here is my application? Or will you have a department in your company who is going to provide that type of service? In both cases, for you as a developer, it is managed. But whether it is a third-party company like AWS or it's a different department who is doing that managing, then we can call it managed or self-managed, maybe. Like you would have OpenRisk would be an example of self-managed serverless.
So, or OpenWhisk, OpenFast, what was the third one that I saw today? Kubeless. Knative, Kubeless, yes. Right? They're, all of these could be considered to be self-managed. Yes. Even though there may be also managed versions of those available as well.
Yes, there might be, but yes, exactly.
So if we were having this conversation 4 years ago, mm-hmm. all of those names that we just listed off didn't really exist. Some of them did, but most of them didn't.
I think that 4 years ago, it was mostly Lambda. I think that Azure appeared like maybe 5 years ago, I think, or something like that. And maybe OpenWhisk was there. I'm not sure.
And they're all sort of, you know, we're sort of coming to sort of this time where all of these things are ready for prime time. Do you want to call it ready for prime? Whether you can use it as prime time is a different story. But from a usage perspective, as something that I could build my business on. Again, this is what we're going to talk more about in the next episode, but I believe that everything is at a reasonable GA level. It's not version one.
No, it is GA. I don't think it's GA. However, like with any relatively new idea or technology, something becomes GA, and then GA initially means GA for a small subset of cases. And then over time, that will be expanding, right? I do think it's GA, but I also think that the number of cases is relatively limited to certain specific use cases. It will never be 100%, but I don't think that we reached the desired scope of the use cases which would fit into serverless. I don't think that we are there yet. But for those where actually the current implementation fits their needs, it would be GA. At least, and this is now tricky. GA in managed serverless, definitely GA. Lambda is, I mean, it's been there forever. Now self-managed as, yes. But then the self-managed would pose additional obstacles. Like if you're managing your serverless infrastructure, then does it bring all the benefits? But that's an extra episode, I guess.
We're making the statement that everything is GA, not just version 1 GA, but everything's at least version 3, version 4 GA. Right? We're sort of making numbers up. But, you know, it's everything's stable enough now to where I would be willing to risk a good portion of my business on it.
I wouldn't say good portion, but a portion of your business.
A measurable portion, let's say. Not just 1%. Yes. I'd be willing to go 20, 25% of my business.
That's the part I wouldn't agree. So if we say, okay, let me rephrase that. I think that generally speaking, function as a service flavor of serverless would be GA. And I don't think that container as a service flavor of serverless is GA yet, right? I think that there is work there to be done. We're close, but not there yet. And then, so if function flavor of that is GA, then I still wouldn't say that you can take an average company and say 25% of what you have is going to be nano services. I'm not to say functions, kind of like, and it's not if you have microservice, then this would be nano service, right? I'm not sure that companies are ready to split it into such tiny pieces at 25%. If we say 5, maybe, yes. I mean, but 5 is a considerable number. The same thing, I might be too pessimistic, but I would say that the percentage of companies ready to use Kubernetes would be, not companies, but percentage of workloads in companies for Kubernetes is not 100%. It's not even 550, right? We are talking about low two-digit numbers.
So I will concede that. And you said function. The one thing that I agree with you on, and I hadn't really thought much about it, because Lambda has been out there for so long, right? They're sort of the original of the big three. Did Google Functions, they're the last to the game, I think,
they're
right?
They're the last. They maybe 3 years, give or take.
So functions have been around for a long time, in internet time, a long time. But the container-based, the ECSs, the cloud runs, those are, or ECS with Fargate, is relatively new.
Yes.
In comparison to their function brethren. And in theory, that should be simpler. But if you've been running containers already on a bare Docker node without orchestration, Mesos, Kubernetes, doesn't matter. It's the same but different, right?
I tend to look at it from different directions, kind of that are colliding now. I think that there is that serverless movement that is oriented towards functions, right? And then that in parallel, after Lambda, so containers are newer than Lambdas, right? And then containers appeared, Kubernetes appeared, and now put serverless completely aside. And then there is that effort to make containers easier to deploy, right? Abstracting layers on top of schedulers like Kubernetes, but it doesn't have to be Kubernetes. And then that those two separate efforts are kind of combining themselves into the same pinnacle of being called serverless. What I'm trying to say is that I think that different approaches are coming from different directions, but ultimately going towards the same objective, which is what we call today serverless. I wouldn't say that idea behind containers started, hey, let's make a better version of serverless. I don't think that happened. It just kind of naturally evolved and come to the point to say, hey, look at that. Actually, that's also serverless in a way.
When you started down the path for the course, for the serverless section. You made a conscious decision to not write everything from scratch. You chose the serverless framework to do your development, right?
Yes.
Now, of course, they've been around for a very long time. I used them on a project a few years ago, back when it was very, like, less than 1.0, like 0.1. I was like very early adopter. Felt the pain because I was trying to do stuff with Java. That's my primary language still, because JavaScript is, sorry for the kids, I'm not a kid anymore. Callbacks? What are callbacks?
Sorry for interrupting. I do share that actually I have if I would have to choose between Java and JavaScript, I would have a slight preference towards Java. I wouldn't say that that's my favorite, but I would go towards that. But then when you think in terms of functions now, then JavaScript, if those are my only two choices, makes much more sense because it's tiny, it's small, if you ignore the fact that that you need 5,000 dependencies for anything, it's feels better for something that is going to be 3-digit number of lines.
Right. And if you're coming at serverless from a Spring Boot, now this is prior to Quarkus, this is prior to everything, right? Going back three or four years. If you were coming at it to where you had, I think it was 2 jar files that Lambda gave you, or that you had to have in order to spin it up. But hey, I'm a Spring Boot developer, so let's go ahead and bring all the Spring Boot dependencies in. Then you're back to where you're at with the 500 dependencies. I think what I'm trying to say here is having a developer framework, an application developer framework, is really important to help keep you within the guardrails. Because you cannot create, I'm going to step out on a limb here, you cannot create functions the same way you create full applications.
No. I was about to say something, but I'm keeping it for the next episode.
Okay. So, so this is still trying to stay around the 101. Just because you've been an application developer for 30 years, like me, you've got to completely retrain your brain.
Yes.
Because it is a different way of thinking. Can you still use your dependencies? Sure. No problem. State? What is the state you speak of? Well, what's funny though, now with Lambda and EFS, okay, sure, you can do it. Doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. And even before, kind of, you shouldn't be doing stateful applications, no matter whether we're talking about serverless or not. And when I say stateless, you should be doing stateless applications. What I really mean is that your state should not be in your application. Use a database.
Yeah, store it somewhere outside of the application. It should not be inside it. Yeah.
Exactly. And then we can discuss whether actually you should have... for any serious use case, doesn't matter if you use lambdas and if you use functions, you will have to have state somewhere. It's impossible not to have a state. It's just not in your function or application or even monolith, kind of like not where you're developing.
Right. So that's probably one of the biggest things that you, if you're not used to writing stateless applications, if you're coming from stateful applications, making that jump to stateless, you think is going to be simple, but your fingers will tell you different when you sit down to type things out because you're going to fall back into stateful habits. And that's not a bad thing, but you'll quickly find out that scaling becomes a big issue really fast. And that's one of the big pluses of good serverless, right? Yes, there are servers there, right? We haven't even mentioned that. Yes, there are still servers there. But your application can scale infinitely. That's a positive and a negative.
That's kind of, you know, a while ago when I was exploring functions as a service, lambdas and what's or not, I was kind of frustrated. Okay, so you support only those three languages, right? My application cannot run, one instance cannot run more than whatever number of minutes, and then so on and so forth. To be honest, I was frustrated with that. And now I have a completely opposite reaction. Actually, I'm frustrated that they're removing those restrictions. Like the news the other day that you read about being able to attach, what was it?
EFS to Lambda.
EFS, right. So actually, I think that that was a good thing. It took time to get used to it. And now that they're removing, because they want to increase the customer base, I understand that, but they're removing the constraints that were guiding you towards better usage of certain technology, and basically that were telling you, oh, you cannot fit into those guide rails, then actually this is not a good use case for you. But now those guide rails are getting removed, and that's not a good thing, maybe.
Yeah, there's probably a couple of good lightweight cases. Again, if you're listening from AWS, thank you for listening. But we know that EFS is not really a performant data store. It's not true NFS. It's NFS compliant, but it's not fast. Sure, you can provision throughput. It still doesn't matter. So it's a toss-up, right?
And, you know, kind of like when I think about use cases of types of functions that would benefit potentially, maybe, from storage like that, I always come up with the use cases that actually do not really need more than one zone. So kind of like, I don't know, if it's big data processing, right? Most likely, if the whole zone is down for 15 minutes, it's not going to be the end of the world. That's not a user-facing usually application.
Right. That's a batch job that's running somewhere.
Exactly. So, yeah. So I'm not saying always, but most of the cases I can imagine that would need that would be just as better off with block storage, which is limited to a zone. But yeah, you're in a single zone. So what if zone goes down? It's not pretty. It's not nice. But you're not really putting Amazon's homepage, Amazon.com. That's not the type of application we're talking about, anyways.
Well. And maybe this is one we'll talk about, but I'll go ahead and mention it, is should we, even if we're in a single zone, should I be reliant upon real disk, whether it's EBS or EFS? Shouldn't I instead be using S3 and just making API calls for data instead? Right? It's those kinds of things. But, all right, so let's hold that, because that's a very good question about what we'll talk about in the next one. Now, the one thing we talked about was JavaScript versus Java. One of the things that is usually considered a con for serverless is cold starts. If there's not an instance available, it takes X amount of time for that function, that service, to become available for usage. So an event comes in. Hey, there's nothing running to access it. Okay, let me go spin one up, and then we'll pass the request onto that. JavaScript, no big deal, right? Reasonably-ish fast. Was that what you saw when you were doing your tests?
Yes, reasonably fast. I did tests in this batch only with JavaScript, so I haven't compared it with Java. That would actually be a good idea.
So let me tell you that. Then Java, using standard Java, I'm not talking Graal, I'm not talking the higher performing JVMs. I'm talking just a vanilla JVM. You're talking, it could take seconds sometimes for it to warm up.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because I don't see functions. So I don't see people, I don't see sufficiently good use case for functions that are being hit, a single function being hit with thousands or millions of requests per day. I don't think that that's a use case. I think some kind of batch processing is a good use case. Maybe a trigger of a webhook from something, right, is a good use case. Most of the good use cases do not really I don't think it's that critical whether it starts in a millisecond or 3 seconds. I don't think that for the use cases I'm imagining for functions, right?
So one that I could think of that would be interesting is if you're sort of a MarTech, a marketing technology type play, you're doing ad serving. Ad serving, you've got to have fast response because there's a lot of things in play. If you've never looked into that, that's a very interesting side of our business.
Yes, actually happened. I almost worked for such a company. Spent some time with them. But yes, but you wouldn't use functions as a service for that. It doesn't matter. JavaScript is also kind of like too slow. If you need to spin up an instance, it's already too late. Of whatever that is. So you need to have an instance running. And what you're really looking for in that cases like that is probably to be able to scale that instance depending on the traffic. But still, that's kind of, oh, I can handle up to 1,000 requests per second or whatever, right? Oh, I'm closing to 900. Let me spin up one more. And I will still, until that spinning up of additional instances is happening, you're still handling your requests, right? One instance of something. And this is now important to understand. If you have an instance of something, whatever that something is, in this case, functions, right? Per request, then you need to think twice what is a good use case. Let's say a simplest possible use case I can imagine now. Not simplest, but simple one. Let's say a silly website. One of those that you do with Jekyll or whatever cool kids do it today, right? So, and I open a homepage, right? Normal homepage, right? It has few JavaScript libraries and some CSSs and some images. That's probably going to generate at least 50 requests. A single hit on a homepage, right? 50 requests. Is really architecturally, forget about kind of what is a service, what is not a service. Architecturally, that it doesn't make sense to have a 50 instances of something being created because I have 50 requests based on a single user request. That's not a use case. And that's a big majority. Almost most of the things have huge number of requests these days.
And that's a good place to stop because we're leaning back into when you may want to use serverless and when you may not want to use serverless. So a couple of things we called out. Functions as a service today, between me and Victor, we both agree that functions as a service is very usable, completely GA from a managed perspective. If you wanted to use self-managed, I don't know that that's completely GA yet. Self-managed functions, maybe?
I think it's GA. OpenVSC is good enough. Fast is a misleading name. I'm not sure whether that would characterize as function, even though it's called fast. But let's say OpenVSC is good. It's rather a question of how much do you want to do that on your own. That's a real question, rather than it's GA, I think.
And the biggest con, of course, you can go Google anything about serverless and you'll find out about cold starts. And just because there's a cold start issue, I don't believe should throw out the baby with the bathwater. Cold start is just what you have to do. So that's where we'll stop for today. Next week, we're going to talk more again about should you even consider using serverless? And if you do, what are the use cases? Sort of like what you were saying, do I have 50 different serverless functions to load up a web page? Pretty extreme, but I have a bad feeling somebody's probably done that before. Okay. Thanks for hanging out, Victor. I think this one was good. I think the next one will be a little bit better because this one, we tried to stay not too opinionated. The next one, opinions will fly.
Takes a lot of effort from me not to be opinionated.
We hope this episode was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, please reach out to us. Our contact information and a link to the Slack workspace are at devopsparadox.com/contact. If you subscribe through Apple Podcast, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover this podcast. Go sign up right now at devopsparadox.com to receive an email whenever we drop the latest episode. Thank you for listening to DevOps Paradox.